Welcome to this audio presentation. My name is Dr. Scott Taransky.
And I'm Joanne Miller. We represent the National Center for Biblical Parenting. Our goal is to help parents and churches have the tools they need to work with children, helping children address their hearts, not just their behavior.
Now, this presentation you're about to listen to was recorded before a live audience. So let's go and listen to exactly what this presenter has to say.
So it's good to be here, and I want to welcome you all again to our workshop today. The title of our workshop is Building Better Cooperation with Better Communication. And before we begin, I would like for us to open up with a word of prayer. Father, we thank you, God, for those that are here today. God, we thank you for, Lord God, giving us such an opportunity to come together to encourage each other to be the parent that you have called us to be. We ask, God, that you would be with us and guide us throughout this session. We ask, God, that you would bless us to receive life-changing principles that can not only encourage us, but strengthen our families. And we give you all the glory in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Thank you again for being here today. Again, we're focusing on building better cooperation with better communication. Now, this workshop is going to be actually in two parts. It's going to be in two parts. The first part has a lot to do with self-assessment, and then the second part has a lot to do with the parent and child interaction, and both parts work well together. So, for example, in our first part of this session, I want to make a statement. The statement is that there are two objects that can affect the outcome of our communication. Two objects that can affect the outcome of our efforts to effectively communicate to our child. The first one is bridges, and the second one is barriers. They can determine the outcome of the way we communicate, how well our communication is received. So, for example, when you think of barriers to communication, here's where we come in. Barriers can be seen as an obstruction from you to get from one point to the next. It has a lot to do with preventing the message from being received and understood. So when you're thinking about communication and when you're thinking about barriers to communication, what are some of the things that we can come up with that we could consider as barriers to communication? Attitude, okay? All right, and this is the person that's doing the communication. It involves both the receiver and the person that's sending the communication, but what are some things that can prevent the communication from being received?
Distractions.
Can we receive a volunteer to write that up on the board, please? Just, okay, yes. So if you could write distraction on the left side, so distraction can be considered as a barrier, okay? What else? What do you think can become a barrier to communication? Location, okay. Location. What I also like for us to do is to identify some personality traits that can become a barrier. For example, disrespect, stubbornness. Now, what we're doing, we're doing self-assessment, so. this may connect to how we may be communicating. Tone of voice, excellent. Joanne said last night that often we don't recognize the tone of voice we're using when we're communicating. Timing. Let's put anger down also. What else can prevent our message from being received or understood? Mistrust. Choice of words, excellent. Our own actions. This is a great list. Now, here's my next question. If you had to look at these list of barriers, which one you think you would find yourself embracing when you communicate with your child? And if there is one up here, then I'd like for you to write that on your paper, on your sheet, in the notes section. Which one of these actions can that you find yourself in when you're communicating to your child? Maybe just one or two. Yes. But I want you to identify, I want you to check in with yourself, and I want you to identify one of these actions that you may find yourself doing when you're communicating with your child. So barriers prevent our message from being received and or understood. And if that's the case, then there is a communication breakdown that will go against our goal of promoting a spirit of cooperation, an environment of cooperation at home. So these are the barriers, and I suggest that you even take time after the session to begin to identify potential barriers in the way that you communicate with your son or daughter. And the reason why is because it can become a point of growth. So as we identified barriers, now I want to look at the other object that can make a difference in the way that we communicate. And that object is called a bridge. So we can either have barriers or we can have bridges. So when you look at this illustration, barriers to communication, and then on the opposite side, you have bridges to communication. If one of these barriers obstruct your goal to effectively communicate to your child, all we need to do is to turn this around and write a statement that can create a bridge. You follow? So at this point, what I want you to do is whatever action that you've selected that is a potential barrier, I want you to just reword that so that it can become a bridge in the way that you communicate. For example, with disrespect, we know that it's a barrier. So to create a bridge, we make a statement that says, I'm going to communicate in a way that's going to promote the value of respect. What does that look like? Kind words. What does that look like? The ability to be patient and listen. It's an attitude that can communicate to the child value, that the relationship is valuable, and you're promoting value into the relationship. So this is something that you could work on, again, outside of the workshop, but it's just important points of growth that we can receive that can make a difference in the way that we communicate. You may even use your spouse to help you. I think another barrier, at least in our home, is facial expressions. Right? And I think just by being aware of the barriers, that's when the beginning of change can come. Because you can begin to work on new skills that can communicate the opposite of a barrier, which is a bridge. So those are two objects that can affect the outcome or our goal to build a healthier environment of communication at home. There's also three factors that I want to talk about that can affect the way that we communicate. Three factors. Number one is our experience. Our experience as a child. Our experience with our parents. For example, how many of us grew up in a home where it was very strict. How many of us grew up as a child where our home was a very strict environment? Okay, I see a few hands there. And how many of us grew up in a home where there was low to no boundaries at all? Okay, and how many of us grew up in a home where the boundaries were, the rules were somewhere in between? Okay, we got most of you. How many of us finding ourselves parenting the way that our parent us? Okay, got a couple of hands up. And how many of us find ourselves parenting the way our parent us, even when we didn't like or do not like the way that our parent raised us? So we find ourselves doing some of the same things our parents did. That's because we learn by what we see. That's a main way that children learn, by what they see. Not by what they hear, but mostly by what they see, and that's how we learn. And so we end up passing on these values to our children. So experience has a whole lot to do with the way that we communicate with our child. It could be the way that we relate it to our parents. It could be the way that we relate to other significant relationships. You know, it could be and also a strenuous experience where, you know, there could have been a death or divorce. Those type of factors in our home that can eventually affect the way that we relate to our children. So three factors that can affect the way that we communicate. The first one is experience. The second one is expectations. When you look at your expectation in relating to your children, are they really realistic? How can you determine whether or not you have realistic expectation for your child? Certainly, it has to do with age level, what age group they might be in. But a lot of time, it may have something to do with where they are from a maturity standpoint. I think sometimes when we have this expectation that our child is smart and we expect the best from them because that's what we are telling them and we are letting them know that they can do everything. But on a maturity level, they may not even be there. They may not be where you think they are. So that can affect the outcome of our communication as well as cooperation in the home. The personality of the child. You know, is it fitting your expectation? The personality that you have. Are you trying to put that expectation that they act like you because that's what you're looking for? Do we have those type of expectations in the way that we communicate? Our communication, is it vague? Is it too general? When you talk to your child, do you tell them to go clean up their room? And when they enter into their room and they just see chaos, they're just like what we call a deer in a headlight. They don't know what to do. Are we too general in the way that we communicate? And our communication, when we communicate expectation, are they negotiable or do we just let the hammer down? Is it just our way and that way only? So expectation has a lot to do with the way that we communicate. And then thirdly, the third factor is your environment. Your environment can affect the way that you communicate. Someone put up here as far as one of the barriers, the distractions. Are there a lot of distractions in the environment at home? Is it heavily stimulated with electronics? That can affect the way that we communicate. Are we trying to communicate with our children when there's like 1,000 things on? It can affect the way we communicate. It can affect the way that they cooperate. Do we foster an environment where responsibility is at the top of the list? Above all, you're going to be responsible. Or do we have an environment where it's more about, I just want to do whatever it takes to make you happy. I just want us to be happy. Happiness is based on what's going on at the moment. It's circumstantial. So, where are we with all of these three factors? Someone once said that when we have responsibility without relationship, it leads to rebellion. And then someone else said that when we have relationship without responsibility, it leads to ruin. So there has to be a balance of the two. One final note about your environment. Is it loaded with activity? Does everyone have an iPad or some type of schedule where they're trying to keep track of the activities? Are we spending a lot of time together, or are we going in different directions? Those type of actions can determine the way we communicate and the level of cooperation we receive when we communicate. So that's the self-assessment. And what are some of the things that we may need to change so that we can, when we communicate, be effective at communicating our desires, our expectations, to the degree where it connects with our child and they'll be able to relate with us and eventually cooperate with what we're trying to achieve. They go hand in hand, communication and cooperation. Effective communication can foster this environment of healthy cooperation. And so here at the center, we have identified 5 steps that can foster greater cooperation at home. 5 steps that have been identified for the parent, 5 steps that have been identified for the child. They both work well together. That's how they work. They both correspond with the other to bring about this healthy sense of cooperation. And so if you turn your handout over, we're going to go over those 5. Responsibility without relationship. It's when the child believes that the only thing that you want to do is for them to do something. They may not feel love at all. They just may feel this, that their existence is based upon completing this to-do list. I have to get the best grades. I have to take care of all of my responsibility, but yet I don't feel like you love me. Yes, and everything has to be connected to the relationship. Our children need to feel like they're loved. And we realize that things need to get done. But that should not be the main thing. It should be tempered with the fact that I love my child no matter what. And then on the other side, you have the permissive parenting, which just allow the child to do whatever they think they need to do because they just want their child to be happy. Just a number of things. So both has its rightful place, but on the extreme end, it could be extremely dangerous for the future of the child and the health of the family. And so we need both, but it has to be the right balance. Okay, so are we ready to go through our 5-step routine? Okay, this is a part of our Parenting is Hard Work seminar. We actually have 4 main sessions that we teach, but today I'm going to highlight one of the sessions. And it has a lot to do with teaching children to listen and follow instructions, creating an environment where we can have healthy cooperation at home. So let me first say that you're not alone if we have cooperation issues at home. How many of us have cooperation issues at home? Okay, and all the hands go up. Cooperating is a big deal at home. And we find ourselves, you know, just fighting this monster. Why is it that we can't receive healthy cooperation at home? It's not because that parents or the child doesn't want to get along. It's because, well, there are several reasons why there is this conflict. And at the top of the list is skill base. How to work together to foster such an environment where you can get your objectives done. We've identified five areas where parents often get off track when trying to get their children to cooperate at home. And these five areas that we've identified are the cornerstone to this routine. But let me say before I teach it, before I share with you, it is so important for the parent to know that before our children can change, then we have to also change. It goes back to they watch us, they look at us, and if we're modeling skills that we would like for them to receive, then they have a better chance of living out those skills as well because they learn by what they see. Each of these skills are considered values that children need to know in life. Just to be able to be successful in life, we consider these skills that valuable. And so as we go through the five-step routine, it's beyond just instructions, it's really promoting life skills that our children need to be successful in life. So, are we ready? All right. So if you take a look at your handout, the first step that we have is for the parent. And in the first step, we want the parent to get close to the child. How many of us grew up where yelling and speaking loud in the home was the mode of communication? How many of us grew up in the home where trying to communicate to our to one another, even if you're not in the same room? Yeah, that's a struggle. That's a barrier. And that can prevent cooperation from taking place because oftentimes there's intensity in the voice, the tone. And if I hear an unpleasant voice, I'm not likely to want to gravitate toward it. It's just something like self-preservation comes to mind, right? So what we want to do as parents, we want to create the scenario. We want to create the environment. And so the first step for us to establish a good instruction routine is to get close to the child. And there's two important reasons why we need to get close to our child. Number one is that getting close raises the felt value of what we are about to say. So just by being close to our child can raise the importance of our instructions. If we want healthier cooperation, that's a good place to start. And then, number two, getting close breaks the child's concentration from what he or she is doing. So, for example, we know that this is the digital age, and we know that this is the age where many children have electronics. I can tell you that if we want to start a conversation with our child, we often have to break that concentration that they're having with their electronics. It can affect the outcome of our communication as well as the level of cooperation that we want at home. So getting close raises the felt value of our instructions, and it also breaks the child's concentration from what he or she is doing. With younger children, being close could also mean getting to their level, looking at them from eye to eye, you know, just bending down and just getting to the level. With older children, you can touch them, put your hand on their shoulder. Use some type of cue to let them know that mommy or daddy has something important to say And so the reason why I'm getting close to you is because I'm about to say something of value. The goal of step one is to use physical closeness to raise the felt value of instruction. Now here again, I'm going to refer to the barriers from time to time, or bridges, because if we get close and the feeling of disrespect is in the environment, that could work against us. So if we have something to share, something to say that's important, it's often wise to just see if we're carrying a sense of respect with us, carrying the power or the feeling of respect with us, so that we can create the bridge rather than create the barrier. So the goal of step one is to get close to your child. Step one for the child, then, is to learn to come when called. You know, sometimes we're going to find our children, but we need to teach our children that when mom or dad call, they need to come to us. The goal is to get close. Sometimes we will get close to them, but many times we should build an expectation that our children get close to us. And so for an example, how many of us have toddlers again? Anybody have toddlers? Here's a very critical stage right now where we can teach them a preschool skill to learn to come when called. You could even make a game out of it, because that's how children learn often. As Brother Kurt said earlier, learn through object lessons or activities. And so from a preschool level, it's huge for them to get it now, because they never know when they need to come close to us. They may be in danger, or we may need for them to run to us as quickly as possible. So with toddlers, you would create a game, and you would say, okay, we're going to start playing a come when you call game. When mommy calls you, I want you to come. And so what's the name of your child?
Kale.
Oh, Kale. Okay, so Kale. All right, Kale, then whenever I call you, I want you to come to me. And when you come, I want you to say, here I am, Mom, or yes, Mom. So, for example, let's say you're all in the same room, and there's a chair about 4 feet away. Say, Kale, go over to that chair. Mommy's going to be right here. We're going to play now, this game. So you call Kale's name. And when he hears his name, he comes. So you're planting those seeds of expectations in him to come when called. And you just, every time he obeys, you congratulate him. You give him affirmation. You tell him that he's doing a good job. You're letting him know that you're growing up because you're learning how to obey. You put in those clear cues so that he could connect the dots and eventually understand that obedience has a lot to do with growing up. Then you wait and you plan to call Kale when he is busy playing. We're still training, but we're practicing training him to come when called. If he comes, give him an attaboy. But if he doesn't, remind him, Kale, remember, when mom calls, you need to come and see what I need to say. So you continue to build those seeds of expectation in him until it becomes a life skill, until it becomes a habit. Now, with older children, if yelling was the mode of communication at home, it would be good to just have a sit down moment and say, okay, we can really change the way we communicate at home, because we want to communicate in such a way that we value one another. Sometimes when I need you, I will find you. But other times when I need you, I'm going to call. And at that moment, I need for you to stop what you're doing and come and see what I need. And just let them know that this is the way that we want to interact. Mom and Dad, we're going to model that behavior, And we want you to also model that behavior as well. You want to reduce yelling as much as possible. Because again, we want to communicate that we are valuing each other in the way that we communicate. So the first step for the child is to learn to come when called. The second step for the parent is consider the timing. Again, we have a barrier up here that says timing, because sometimes that could be an obstruction to us getting the cooperation that we seek. In this step, what we want to communicate to ourselves is this question. Is this the best time to give an instruction? Not a perfect time, but if this is this the best time? So one of the reasons why we need to be in close proximity of our child is to just observe and see what's going on at that moment. There could be a situation where someone may be going through some emotional issues. Janet may have broken up with her boyfriend. And getting a responsibility done is not at the top of her list. But receiving empathy is. Someone may have had a bad day at school, and taking out the trash may not be at the top of the list. But being able to get their parents' attention so that they could listen to them is. You see how that works? So the second step for the parent is to consider the timing. And in this step, what we're communicating to our child is that our relationship is more valuable than a responsibility that needs to get done. Now, we do realize that things need to get done at home. But what we're suggesting is this the best time to get it done? One father communicated to us that he typically yells when he sees stuff not happening like it ought to. And so he came into the house and he saw the trash overflowing, and he knew that it was Jimmy's job to do the trash. So as soon as he saw the trash, he thought about Jimmy. And of course, yelling out his name, looking for him, trying to see what's going on so that he could take care of this issue, because the trash needed to be emptied and it was Jimmy's job to empty the trash. He was set out on a mission to make sure that Jimmy take care of the trash. Well, by the time he found Jimmy, he saw Jimmy engage in doing his homework. And it just caught him off guard, because in his mind, he had the mindset of getting things done. But when he saw Jimmy doing homework, which is a big step for Jimmy, he realized that he could have waited. He could have settled down and waited on an opportune time for Jimmy to take care of the trash. So again, step two is consider the timing that can help achieve the goal of fostering greater cooperation at home. We're not saying a perfect time, but we're asking you to evaluate which is needed, more relationship or more responsiveness. Step two for the child is to be ready to receive an instruction. Now, of course, children may not look at instruction as something valuable. Matter of fact, there may never be a good time to receive an instruction from a parent or from anybody, because for many of them, that's their mindset. You are taking me out of what I want to do. And they fail to see the value of family life together. We are a family and we need each other. So many times children don't see the value of receiving instruction. And some children do. Some children are able to pick up on this and carry it out. But some children have a hard time wrestling with instructions, because it's a maturity. It has a lot to do with their maturity. It has a lot to do with where they are as a mature person. So for example, those who are relational friendly, they may tend to follow up on responsibility more so than those that are not relational friendly, Because the relational friendly children, their goal is to please. But the non-relational friendly children, their goal may not be to care at all. It's not big on their to-do list. It's not big on at the top of their list whether they have a good relationship with you or not until they want something. Right? But here in this step, we want to teach children to be ready to receive an instruction. Proverbs 19, verse 16 says, "He who obeys instructions guards his life, but he who is contemptuous of his ways will die." That word contemptuous has a lot to do with having this look of being disrespectful toward those in authority and having this view of being disrespectful toward those who are giving you instructions. Proverbs 19, verse 16. So it's huge for our children to learn to be ready to receive an instruction. As a matter of fact, when they enter into the workplace, that's something that's going to be important. Because if you can just picture a supervisor calling them, right? Even though they may be doing something important, he's going to be looking for how well they respond to him calling them. And so if they can get it now growing up in the home, they can receive it when they get their first job without the threat of being fired. Right? Here's what we need to communicate. The way you respond to me can demonstrate respect or disrespect. When I call you, the way you respond to me can communicate respect or disrespect. A great story to share with our families is the story in 1 Samuel chapter 3. It's a story about Eli and Samuel. Eli was a boy living with Samuel, and one night when Eli and Samuel was sleeping, Samuel heard a voice. Samuel. Samuel. He thought it was Eli, and so immediately he got up to see what Eli wanted. He didn't yell from the other room. He didn't ignore him, right? Tried to pretend that it would go away. He got up. And Eli told him, he said, "Well, I didn't call you." The story goes on, and two more times, Samuel heard the voice. Someone called. He thought it was Eli. And because he had great respect for the man of God, he got up immediately again, two more times, to see what Eli wanted. And Eli, it came to him that the Lord was calling Samuel. And so at that moment, Eli said, "Samuel, next time you hear the voice, just say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" Samuel heard the voice again. And Samuel said, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening." We want you to understand that this value of building an instruction routine is more than just getting things done around the house. It is really preparing our children for life and how they receive instructions from people of authority outside of the home. But most importantly, it is also preparing them to receive instructions from God. Having that receptive heart to receive instructions is critical to the future of our children. And in this step, we want to equip them to be ready to receive an instruction. Just let them know. How well you receive determines how the value or the respect that you have for me or anyone else that's giving you instructions. Children need to be ready to receive an instruction. Step 3, give the instruction. So here we are at step 3, and we haven't even given the instruction. The first two steps pave the way for a healthy sense of cooperation because it focuses on the relationship. The relationship. So we're creating the environment for a healthy sense of cooperation, and we're promoting the relationship as of greater value than the responsibility. However, before we give the instruction, it's so important to distinguish a suggestion, an opinion, from an instruction. I think you should do your homework right now. It's more like an opinion. And if you tell anybody who don't like to do homework, I think you like to do your homework right now. Maybe later. Right? You should probably go to bed right now. Sounds more like a suggestion that gives them the power to say, let me think about it. Right? But an instruction gives direction. And we believe that each of those opinions, suggestions, and instructions have a major role in family life, but our children need to know the difference. So when we give an instruction, we got to be firm, direct, give them a form of direction on things that they need to do. It will help to even put different cues into the statement, such as you need to make up your bed now. You need to finish your homework now. See, when you make a statement like that, it gives clear direction of your intentions or of your expectations. And what they must do at that point is understand that this is not a moment where they can just share their opinions. It's not a moment where they can begin to create an extensive dialogue about the tasks that need to be done. It's a direction. We are providing instructions for them to go and obey. So, we want to make it clear that an instruction provides direction. It is a statement that requires obedience. Obedience. Step three for the child answers. And it's this phase, here's what we're looking for. After we give the instructions, we're looking for three things. Number one, we're looking for the evidence that our child heard what we said. Sometimes we may need to repeat what we said, or they need to repeat what we said, but we got to make sure that they heard what we said. So we're in close proximity with our child, and we give the instructions, and now we're checking to see if they heard what we said. It's very critical to get that step completed, because sometimes if we give instructions and we come back to follow up and it's not done, and we're like, well, I thought I told you to take care of picking up your clothes. And they look at you like they're confused. When did you say that? Or I didn't hear you, mommy. Did you say that? Right? Or, you know, they may even say, you know, they'll create different scenarios. And they'll leave you walking like, now I know I told that person to take care of this assignment. So you want to make sure that they clearly understood what you said by them responding to the instruction that you gave. Number two, when we give the instruction, it's like a verbal contract that we gave them. It's like a post-it note on their conscience. It's on their to-do list, and now it's attached to their conscience, and they know that they need to get it done. And then three, it's an indicator of whether or not they want to receive it with a good attitude or not. If we give the instruction and then they give us a not so good of an attitude, then we can clearly see that we have an attitude problem. We have a character issue. And that is something that we need to eventually address so that we can remove that as a barrier from fostering this element or environment of cooperation. So many times, if it's done with a nasty attitude, we just may say, okay, let's not do it right now, because I want you to learn to do what I ask you to do with the right attitude. Mom and Dad, we do things so that you can enjoy life, and we do things many times with a good attitude. We want you to do the same. So the child may have to just take a moment and regroup change their attitudes, because we can't change it. They need to change their attitude and come back and do it with a good attitude. It's a life skill that children need to learn, okay? All right? And so at that point, you identify what character trait that need to be worked on so that he can learn not to fall into that habit of doing something that you ask him to do with a bad attitude. It's so important to learn how to do take care of your responsibilities with a good attitude. You could even let him know what you see. Right now, here's what I see, and here's how mommy feel because of what I see. What's going on right now? Why do you have to communicate in such a way when I just simply ask you to take care of this responsibility? Put the pressure on him. Let him become aware of his actions, because sometimes we're not aware of our actions. We're not aware of our attitude. We just do it out of habit. We do it because we saw it on TV, right? And so you want to connect with that child so that they could see what they're doing, because they need to make the adjustment to eventually do what mommy tells them to do with the right attitude. It depends on if it's working or not. What we want to do is promote heart change. So again, we want to identify, you know, what character trait do we need to teach our child so that they can do the responsibility with the right attitude. We have a routine that we call the break routine, and it has to do with the child being set aside to work on their heart. And we use keywords like, right now you need to work on your attitude. And everything is going to stop. Your privileges, you talking to your friends, you're playing with your electronics, all of these things are going to stop until you can work on your attitude and be able to do what mommy tells you to do with the right attitude. That will get their attention. And if you're doing it in such a way that it's not punishment, but it's discipline, then they will learn to adapt and change. All right, and we got two more steps, and we'll be finished. The fourth step is for the parent to wait expectantly. So when you give an instruction, and when your child receives the instruction, your step is to wait expectantly. And we say wait expectantly because you have not forgotten about the task. They probably want you to forget about the task if they don't like responsibility, but you have not. And so in this step, you put the weight of the responsibility on the child's shoulder, and you actively wait until they complete the assignment. That means that you may have to follow up on them to let them know that you haven't forgot, to let them know that, hey, do you need some help? What do you need to do so that you can finish? In this step, you're just simply saying that mom or dad is actively waiting until you get it done. Now, we realize that there's a lot of multitasking going on. We got a lot of things to do at home. But we're talking about the character development of our child. And so sometimes if we know that we have a child that resists instructions, we have to build into our routine that instead of me doing three or four things at the same time, it may be one or two. I'm going to have to make a priority list and identify the two things that I could do because my child needs my help to develop this responsibility so that they can learn and mature, so that they can grow and mature and become responsible. So in this routine, you're placing the weight on them, and you want them to feel uncomfortable until they get the job done. You want them to learn about responsibility because there's a tremendous value in the family. It means that you can do the task without reminders. It means that you can get the work done without a lot of prodding. So when you embrace that skill, it shows that you are being responsible. And you could even let them know what that looks like as well. Step four for the child is that the child do the job as if on a mission. We want to communicate to the child that whenever mom or dad gives an assignment, it is a set of special instructions that need to be done. It speaks value to the relationship that we have. I'm not giving you this just so that I can make your life miserable. I'm giving you this because we need each other. This is your part of being, this is a part of the responsibility of being a part of this family. It communicates that whatever I tell you to do, I want you to look at it in such a way that it is important. No matter what the task is, it needs to get done. It needs to get done. One of the things I say is that many times the reason why children do the things that they do is because of being undisciplined and immature. And what we have to do is to equip them to be disciplined, train them to become mature. And so you identify the character traits that you need to work on. It's a heart issue. Many times we say that an attitude is a window's view of the heart. So if we see an unpleasant attitude, it just communicates to us what's going on in the heart. And we know that we have a heart issue. So our focus would be how to relationally connect with the child in such a way that we can help them overcome whatever that's causing them to get stuck. A lot of times they don't know the attitude that they are communicating because it's just a habit. But again, many times it's the bottom line is that they're immature. And so we have to have a complete plan to help them to get from that stage of immaturity to maturity. Let's do the final phase and then we have to go downstairs. The final phase is for the child to report back, step 5. In this stage, which is the final phase, the child actually come first. They report back and say that they're done. And so this is when we are teaching children about accountability. So when we give them something to do, many times if we know that we need to follow up on them, we would tell them the job is not done until it's complete. But if you have a child that's thorough in their work, you may not need for them to tell you that they're finished all the time. But many times you do just so that you'll know that it's been done. You won't have to worry about it. You know that it's been done. They're just communicating to you that it's done, mom or dad, and they can move on. And then step 5 for the parent is to inspect and release. And so in this final phase, you are actually checking the work to make sure that it's done right. Whether it's a chore or whether it's homework, you know, you want to use this as an opportunity to teach about thoroughness, to teach about, you know, what you consider a job well done. So if somebody's washing the dishes, you just want to go through a checklist to let them know whether they did a good job or whether you need to point out some things that can help them do a good job. Not a perfect job, but a good job. So after you inspect, then you release. You set them free so that they can do some other things that they would like to do. And it set their conscience free as well. You know, this bring the entire process full circle. They learn how to follow through on the instructions. They learn about responsibility. They learn about accountability. And so they're now set free to enjoy other aspects of life. It's a gift that we give our children. Now, some children may not complete the work. And they try to hide from mom and dad because they know they didn't do what they're supposed to do. And this time, it may require for them to be encouraged. You may highlight some good things that they are doing, but you also may highlight some things that they need to work on. The goal is to not allow them to slip through the cracks because each phase of this process is designed to equip the child with life skills that they will need beyond the home. I think, again, just being able to listen what she's looking for. Sometimes you can communicate that you enjoy working with her, but mom has to do some other things and you believe that she can get it done without your help. And if she's persistent to do it her way, then that still means that there's an attitude problem because she's trying to get her way. not do what's right for the family. You might have to bring that out, and you may have to, again, use what we consider a break and bring in restrictions until she can work on that character trait, work on that that desire to be obedient and do what she was told to do. Not saying that she's using manipulation,
oh, yes, she is.
But that could be an undertone. All right. It's an overtone. All right. I'm going to be available to answer your questions. Right now it's time for us to go down to the general session, but I am available to answer your questions. I really appreciate you all being a part of this discussion, and if there's anything that we can do as a center, or if there's anything that I can do, feel free to let me know. God bless you.
At the National Center for Biblical Parenting, we have a number of practical resources for you. This presentation that you've just listened to is only one of many that we have to offer you.
We'd like you to visit us on the web at biblicalparenting.org and find some more resources to strengthen your family.